Growing up in poor, crime-ridden neighborhoods left a mark on Adriana Rocha Garcia, and it has shaped the city councilwoman she is today. She is appreciative of law enforcement officers and the work they do to keep our city safe. She is a champion of education, access to health care, and overcoming poverty. Where others see problems, she sees opportunities. She is not bound by precedent or historical patterns, and she's running for mayor because she feels so much more can be done. Here now is our interview with mayoral candidate and city councilwoman, Dr. Adriana Rocha Garcia. Councilwoman Adriana Rocha Garcia, thank you for coming back. We had you last here in March of 2024. So welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So at that time, in March of 2024, when you were here last, you said that you were looking into the possibility of running for mayor. There was one issue you had to deal with, and that was your father's recent diagnosis. So first of all, how is your father doing?
My dad's doing really good. I've been so fortunate, Eddie. I have a big extended family, so I have a lot of cousins, and they all want to pitch in. They all want to help. They want to make sure that I feel comfortable. My dad, has good days and bad days. A couple of days ago, he was having a bad day. It happened to be on the day of my kickoff. He thought that it was already nighttime, and he was going to go to sleep and wake up and go to my kickoff the next day. He was so confused.
But he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
Yes, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's about a year and a half ago. So I called him and I said, just kind of walked him through and I asked him, what are you doing? How are you doing? Are you going to get ready soon? And he's like, why? And so I just, was kind of trying to soothe him and comfort him. And he said, well, I can get ready. But it takes like a lot of effort, right, just to kind of calm him down. And so luckily he was able to make it. And I was glad that he was able to be there.
Well, in her later years, my mother suffered through dementia. So it's something I'm very familiar with. It's an ordeal to be able to deal with a parent. You're fortunate in one respect that your son is old enough now, because some people, he's an adult, and some people get stuck in that sandwich generation where you're taking care of elderly parents and taking care of minor children at the same time.
Yeah, and I'm so fortunate, Eddie, I forgot to reference that, but I have great help because after work, my son goes directly over to my parents' house. He'll pick up medicines from the pharmacy. He'll pick up whatever they need for dinner, whatever they need for groceries. And by the way, he'll also do my dad's insulin. He'll make sure he takes all of his evening medicines and, he'll comfort him. He'll even check to make sure that there's no trash in the recycle bin when he's going to put it out the next day. And so I'm so fortunate to be able to have that type of help from my son. My dad loves it. And so sometimes though he forgets or he says, well, Steve hasn't been here in weeks. And I'm like, well, I think he was here because you're wearing your insulin patch and he puts it on every day. And so again, it's that nice, gentle reminder. And then he starts kind of processing and he says, okay, well, maybe.
So you had a large campaign event Saturday, February the 8th. Tell me about how that event came off.
Yeah, I was so grateful because our kickoff was on the 8th of February and it was a beautiful Saturday afternoon. I was so worried that it was going to be cold, that I was going to have to rent heaters or something. And then it was like a picture perfect day. But we had more than 250 people come out throughout the event. It was about a 2-hour event. And Eddie, I chose to have it in zip code 78207. That's where I came home to when I was born after leaving the hospital. And I was just happy to be able to bring different communities there so that they could see the opportunity, so that they could see the beauty in this park right in the middle of 78207. One of the things that they have at that park is the bloom exhibit. And so I was going for a whole bloom where you are planted theme. And so I just was reminding everybody that there was native flowers around there that, by the way, we had a grant from the federal government just a few months ago that's going to reinvest invest in that area. But I wanted to host it there also just to remind them that this was also one of the most impoverished areas in the city, the most, actually. And then also as a reminder that there's still a lot of work to do. So even though we see beautiful parts of the city flourishing, there's still opportunity to help kids like me who were born in that zip code and can make it if the community comes together and invests in them.
In the 1960s, CBS News did a special on San Antonio and the poverty here. Do you think we've made progress on the issue of poverty?
I think we've made some progress, but not enough. And I'll give the example of, I told you that I was born in zip code 78207. And we have to understand that for families, moving up is different. So for instance, my family, when I was 3 years old, and my dad was able to save money because he was the one that worked, my mom didn't work, to get for a down payment on a house, we moved into zip code 78242. Which, by the way, was one of the zip codes with the most crime. So we went from essentially one of the most impoverished to one with the most crime. And so we moved into Indian Creek. So during elementary, during middle school, my formative years, it was a time that gang members were all over that area of town. One of my middle school classmates was literally shot across the street from my house. And it was so scary. And I think that's why, Eddie, I've built up, one, resistance to adversity, and two, this incredible respect for our law enforcement. And that's because every single time that I felt scared, I called 911. And I'm probably the person on the dais that has called 911 the fastest. And so when I was a young girl, we'd hear shots all of the time. So it was just like roll off the bed onto the ground. Like drive-bys were common in my area. And so I go back to what you just asked a while ago about poverty. And it's different for every family. When you think about the educational system, the way that it exists now, and the school districts that have different access for kids, a child should not be defined by the zip code that they were born in, that they are born in or into for the rest of their life. And sometimes that happens. And so I don't think that we've moved the needle enough. There have been great programs that have resulted from wonderful leadership across the city. I'm a product of one of those programs. And you mentioned the 60s. Fast forward to the 90s when Henry Cisneros worked on the San Antonio Education Partnership. I'm a partnership alumni. I now sit on the board of the San Antonio Education Partnership on behalf of the city council. And that program encouraged me to stay in school because attendance was a part of the package. And then also get a certain grade level because if you met those two requirements, you would get a scholarship. You would also get some additional support in applying to college, which my parents obviously had not gone even past the first and second grade in elementary school. So they had no idea how to help me beyond the third grade. And so I'm always grateful for the San Antonio Education Partnership and communities and schools, which were partnered at the time in the 90s when I was going through middle school and high school. Fast forward to what Julian Castro did with Pre-K for ESSE and investing in our younger ones, because we realized that by the time you're in high school, for some students, it might be too late. The realization came for Julian that it was pre-K where we should be invested in. So that was another revolutionary change in education because everybody started talking about it. Another is pre-K accessible across, right, in different school districts, et cetera. And so those have been great movements in the right direction. Most recently with Mayor Nirenberg's Ready to Work, we have had a lot of work to do. We've been adjusting. We've been making changes. The program is not perfect, but it's a step in the right direction. And so my idea would be to look at those three programs, figure out how we could get them all talking, all working together, and really make a change in that educational attainment and upskilling level to change the course of the generational poverty we've experienced.
So tell me, since you kicked off your campaign, as you move about the city, as you're at your events talking to people, what are the issues that they are telling you they care most about?
So as I've been going around, Eddie, and just listening to people, one of the major concerns that comes up is education. And I didn't realize that people are so focused in on education. It's great. Like I had mentioned some of the programs before that the city has been championing over the last, 40, 50 years. However, I love that that's one of the focus areas for people. Another one is housing, and then healthcare comes up a lot, which is great. And so, yes, of course, everybody still wants to make sure that we have their potholes taken care of and that their streetlights work, that there's
sidewalks.
Exactly. All of the regular quality of life stuff. But they're really focused on making a difference in general for the greater community. And so it's just so refreshing to hear that. And so it's people who maybe already have kids that are a little bit older. So even though they don't have kids in the school system anymore, they still want to help out with mentoring programs or want to help with tutoring. And so, and they want to help the community. And it's just for me, it's just very refreshing to hear that.
In the last legislative session, we had the Texas Regulatory Consistency Act, also known as the Death Star Bill. Some people call it the Stay in Your Lane Bill. How do you balance that with, since municipalities don't fund or don't necessarily have oversight or any control over school districts, there are things on the periphery that you can do, like pre-K for SA. So tell me how you see the city involvement in education, in healthcare, and in some of the other issues.
It's really about empowering the experts. And that is the first thing that I feel like city leaders should realize, that they're not the smartest people in the room and they're not the experts in the room. But our duty is to surround ourselves with that type of advisor, and not just one advisor, but multiple levels of advisors, bringing in organizations that help us learn what the needs are beyond the classroom, for instance. So one of the things that City Hall has not had probably since Julian Castro's time as mayor, was a meeting of the superintendents. And he used to get the superintendents together. I don't remember if it was quarterly, but I know that it was pretty often. There was actually an education committee. You probably remember that.
I do.
And so the superintendents would come and talk about the things that are going on. So while we can't directly be involved in the everyday curriculum and instruction, we can help support some of the other services. So like after school programs, I'm a product of Communities in Schools, and they're funded partly through the city. Big Brothers Big Sisters mentoring program that they have. By the way, I was so impressed at during the Super Bowl, Big Brothers and Sisters got a big plug from the NFL. So point being that across the nation, these nonprofit organizations are being recognized as the experts in changing communities. Just a few weeks ago, we had a great organization, the Boys and Girls Club, have a gala where they were actually celebrating one of their own. Seymour Battle was the alumni, if you will, of the year. And so our kids need to be able to see someone like them and say, he's made it, I can make it too. She's made it, I can make it too. And so it's taking that investment, and that's how the city can help. It's just reinvesting in the nonprofit organizations that are the experts in doing this work.
So I want to talk about your campaign. Most people jump into a campaign and quickly discover what their path to victory is. Is it your core base plus 10% of independent voters or voters from this district or that district? Tell me how you see traveling down your path to victory. How do you get to the winner's circle on election day?
So definitely have to have the supports of districts 1 through 7 in terms of getting out the vote and making sure that I get out and remind them of the things that I've been doing in conjunction with their city council members, et cetera. But beyond that, 8, 9, and 10 have the highest number of votes. And so in particular, District 9 with Councilman Courage is the one that votes the most. So for them, I really have to have a focused strategy and make sure that they see me out there, that they know that I'm ready to help, that they know that I understand the issues that they face by sitting on council for so many years. So I've got almost 6 years under my belt where I've heard the issues through the other council members as well that have talked about the issues. And so it's connecting with them. It's reassuring them that I want to make sure that they have their quality of life as has been. They have enjoyed it. And thinking about how to help them age in place. And that's critical. We have an opportunity to have the housing bond again, if our residents will have it, if they will approve it again. How do we focus in on those areas of town that have been, I would say, are a little bit older in terms of infrastructure? How do we prioritize those areas as well? Not only the ones that don't have any infrastructure, but the ones that have some of that older infrastructure. And so I think that's how you talk to the districts 10, 9, and to an extent, District 8 as well. I'm very fortunate with District 8 in that I've been heavily involved in healthcare. Because of what happened during COVID and because of what happened during the closure of the hospital on the south side. And so I feel like I've had a good relationship with a lot of the healthcare doctors and been able to establish some inroads there. And a lot of them live in the medical center because that's where they work. And so that'll be another focus area for me.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe in the last election in District 4, you had about 4,500 votes.
So our district in District 4 in particular is the lowest turnout district. And so I have to overcome that. And I have to make sure that I'm very aware of that. But I have to partner up with the districts that are surrounding, right? So Districts 3, District 5, we're very alike. And so that continuation, that support from the neighbors, if you will, of District 4 is going to be critical. But I know that there's those focus areas in Districts 8, 9, and 10 that I absolutely have to chip away at, if you will.
All right. I want to move to some action on the city council because those issues that I want to touch on are going to be important in the mayor's race, I believe. And one of them is, in recent weeks, there seems to be some angst on the city council about the $315 million or so in federal grants that we get from the federal government. There seems to be concern over our relationship to Washington and our relationship to Austin. So my first question is, what do you believe is the status of our relationship to Austin and our relationship to DC? And the follow-up question is, how do we fix it?
Yeah. Well, so Eddie, I've got to tell you this, but I asked about Plan B, C, and D 2 years ago. And so I said, what happens if we get a new administration that is not of the same party that has been in office these couple of years? Oh, well, we'll get to it, or we'll figure it out when we get there, right? About a year later, what happens when federal funding goes away? Oh, well, we'll have a plan for it. I think everybody was thinking that things were going to turn out the other way, and there really wasn't a plan. So I've been asking about this, and I've been hoping that somebody could come in and say, and here it is. Here's Plan B, here's Plan C, here's Plan D. And even if it was broken up into little things, like, for instance, the Migrant Resource Center, right? That was one of the ones that had some of the most, I will call it, attention, right? And so even a year ago.
Just to describe for people, because not everyone is familiar, this is a facility that would take people in who have already been processed by Border Patrol. So if you have not been processed by Border Patrol, you weren't allowed in there. Is that correct?
Correct. That's
okay.
Correct.
Number two, the funding there is paid for by the city and reimbursed by the federal government.
Right. And okay. It's also through our friends at Catholic Charities.
Okay. And the goal with that facility was to give people a meal, let them charge their cell phone, and help them find family in this country to be able to move to until their immigration status went through the process.
So the families that were at the MRC, essentially already had a contact in the United States. So it was just like a place where they could touch base for a little bit of time while they got their flight out to that relative living elsewhere across the United States.
But it's not like in New York City where they would house them for 6 months. It was just literally a temporary place to get settled, get a meal, charge their cell phones, and connect with your family.
Right. I would call it a layover.
There you go.
And so that's probably the best example that I could use. But yeah, that's exactly what it was. And it was a quick one. But even at that, right? So I had been asking for that.
Was your question, will we continue to get reimbursed if someone wants to stop paying that?
Or what happens when we just don't have any more federal funding?
Okay.
And so a few things are at play right now, Eddie, and this is why I feel that somebody that is on the council has an advantage over the folks who might be outside of the council. And that's because for the last few years, our sales taxes have not been the same as in previous years. Our hotel occupancy tax has not recovered since pre-pandemic. And by the way, we're doing okay because Austin's convention center has been under construction, so they've been sending us their business. What happens when we lose that business? ARPA funding is going to be depleted by the end of 2025. And then we also have, by the way, the fact that it's a good problem, I think, for residents to have, because we increased for disabled and elderly residents under my leadership, and I found that we were the lowest. We had a $35,000 exemption. They raised it to $85,000, which is great, again, for our residents, but it affects our city. And then the fifth element that comes to play is the fact that at the Bear Appraisal District, which I sit on the board of directors now, we voted to have the appraisals when you come in and protest your property taxes. Instead of every year, we went to every other year. That affects our local and our school districts. Again, it helps our residents. It gives them a little bit of relief, but we have to be very cognizant of the fact that it's going to affect our bottom line. And when you add to that the fact that we might be not getting or not enjoying as much of the federal dollars as we have in the past few years, then we need to have someone that really knows the budget, that really understands the services that are needed to provide critical services to the residents of San Antonio. And no matter what happens with the state or the federal level, the reality is that there's state officials, there's federal officials that were elected by the same representatives or by the same residents that I represent as well. So we have to absolutely work together and we have to find common ground and focus on that first. I'll give you an example. The Texas Enterprise Zone that we had created with the state. We worked very well with the state. I got to give full credit, obviously, to Jenna Salcedo Herrera and her team over at Greater SATX. But it takes an entire team. It took the economic development people as well at the city, Eric Walsh, all of us, essentially, to land JCB. That was a more than $1 billion investment in 6 months and 1,500 jobs.
And JCB is the equipment manufacturer that's moving to San Antonio.
Yes. And so we are able to also now say that Toyota just also announced 400 additional jobs that are coming here to San Antonio. They were able to make a more than $6 million investment in East Central, in particular to STEM activities. And so if we didn't work well with the state, that would never happen. We have big plans for a corridor connecting I-35 and I-37 so that those manufacturers, when we think of South Texas as the manufacturing capital, if you will, we have to think of the logistics, the transportation that's involved, and the traffic headaches. And so planning ahead, we're working together with partners who are leading the effort. We're just here to support them as their elected officials, but it's the businesses that are leading the charge to create that. That's how you work with your state officials. You show them essentially the math, the opportunity that's there, and more importantly, the people that benefit from them, and remind them that they are all our residents.
So what you're saying is if you were to be elected mayor, you would want to continue to work with whoever's in power to be able, whether it's at the state level or the federal level.
we have to work with whoever is in power. And I'll give you another example at the national level. I am the current president of Women in Municipal Government. And as a president, I represent women from all across the United States of different backgrounds, with different letters behind their names as elected officials. And I do not have, I would say, the ability to say, oh, wait, I don't think that that's right, so I'm not going to represent you. We're going to leave you out. That would be unfair, right? I would have never made it to be president. By the way, I'm very fortunate because in the 50-year history of that organization, there's only been, I'm the second woman from Texas who has been elected president. The first woman was in the second year, and it was Lila Cockrell, Mayor Lila Cockrell.
Oh, wow. Well, and congratulations.
So, thank you. So it had been a while. But in that regard, I also sit on the board for National League of Cities. With the National League of Cities, we're looking for common ground. What do we focus in on that really is going to be better for the improvement of all cities, towns, and villages? And so when we think about bonds, for instance, and making sure that we still have access to tax-exempt bonds so that our cities can continue to function, that's critical. That's something that every city elected official can get behind. It helps, it benefits, and it comes back to your own community because our regional banks are essentially loaning that money and reinvesting it in their community later through nonprofits, et cetera. So it's one of the things that I feel that we don't do enough of is forget about what letter is behind anybody, any elected official's name. It's really about the person, and it's about getting the work done for our constituents.
Recently, the Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy, announced that federal transit funding would be going to areas or municipalities or regions where there was a high fertility rate. San Antonio is above the national average, way above the national average. But do you believe that city departments are prepared to be nimble enough to be able to tackle directives like that, where now the way things are getting funded is going to be different? In this case, San Antonio appears to be okay. But do you think other city departments are nimble enough to respond?
I think that our city departments are nimble enough to respond, but I think that it also takes that advocacy at the elected official level. The elected officials drive policy. We direct Eric Walsh, and he directs his team where to go. And so absolutely it's critical to continue to focus on everything that is going on, right? We have a great team, a legislative team in place. We have great advocates. And then we have Sally Basurto. I don't like shouting anybody out individually, but I've got to say that Sally Basurto and her team do an incredible job of keeping up with everything that's going on.
And Sally's head of government relations for the city of San Antonio, and she works with Assistant City Manager Jeff Coyle overseeing this effort.
And by the way, we have lobbyists at the federal and state level who keep us apprised of everything that's going on. And there's a really cool app now that was created by Aiken Gunn. And you are able to essentially...
The executive order tracker,
yes. And so you're able to keep up of whatever you're interested in. Are you interested in AI, infrastructure? I mean, whatever it is, you kind of just you use a drop-down arrow and it breaks it down, I say, in terms that you're able to understand instead of having to sift through the entire order.
And the team is made up of, from Aiken Gump, Hans Rickoff, but former Congressman Lamar Smith, Republican, former Congressman Phil Vella from Brownsville, Democrat, who joined together in Aiken Gump to represent the city. And they were just there at council, I believe, at B session recently.
Yeah, they were there recently to provide us an update. And that is a critical team to have. And so you mentioned this, but you have someone who is on the D side or was on the D side during their term, and someone who's on the R side as well. And that's what it's going to take. It's people coming together and realizing that it's, like I said, beyond the letter behind your name. It's really all about the city and its residents, and our duty is to the residents and to take care of them. So that's exactly what we should be focused on.
Well, Lamar Smith has represented in Congress San Antonio for many, many years. Phil is unique in that not only did he represent Brownsville in Congress, but his mother was the mayor of Brownsville and his father was a judge. So his wife was an attorney and she was a judge for a while as well. So very active family.
Yeah. And Eddie, when we think about the things that we want to do with our corridor in the South Texas corridor and I-35, it's critical to have someone like him in place because he understands the way that other cities function south. And we have to absolutely understand how they function so that we are able to work with them better and help all of Texas, really.
All right. I want to move to Project Marvel.
Yeah.
So in November, Assistant City Manager Lori Houston went before the council and she laid out Project Marvel. It included a new arena for the Spurs downtown on the location of what was once the Institute of Texan Cultures. Renovations to the Alamo Dome, the expansion of the Convention Center, a UTSA School of Hospitality, converting the old Judge John Wood Federal Courthouse to a 5,000-seat concert venue, a new convention center hotel, and a land bridge that would basically go over I-37 and connect the new arena and the downtown sector to the east side and the Alamo Dome. So tell me, since November, what have you learned about Project Marvel? I think everyone's waiting to hear what are the final components, how much does it all cost, where's the money coming from, what's the city going to do, what's the county going to do, and what are the taxing mechanisms? So what can you tell us?
Well, I'm grateful first that the county has an MOU and that they are supportive of continuing the talks. I think it's critical to keep the San Antonio Spurs here. And so one, I'm a fan of the Spurs, but everybody is. Mm-hmm. But two, I feel that sports really unites a city. And the argument was made the other day, and somebody said, your residents can't afford tickets. Why would you be in favor of this? And I said, my residents might not be at the game, but in their living room, they are watching with their children. My residents are literally lighting velas for the Spurs. They want Coach Pop to get better. Like, yes. They have been praying for Coach Pop to get better. We really need Coach Pop back. And so we start to think about even like what UTSA and the Roadrunners did, bringing us back from the pandemic. And what they did was they literally put us on one team. We are one team. We are one San Antonio. And I think that that's the power of sports. And I absolutely think that we need to keep the Spurs here in San Antonio. And if it's going to take for us to be creative, we have to be creative. So working with the county, working with the Spurs owners, but also working with our residents and trying to see how are they going to benefit from it. We know that small businesses would benefit from it if we start talking about small businesses now, how we incorporate them. And so the Austin FC,
the soccer team,
they have small businesses, the restaurants, that's what their restaurants are. They're small businesses. And so how do we incorporate something like that into our model? How do we make sure that the residents that are living around the area do not get displaced? How do we as a city help them so that they could stay in their homes, so that they could create those legacy homes for future generations of their families? That's what we need to do, and we need to bring them to the table. I'm grateful that there's already some conversations that have been started around the East Side community also as to what we do with the Frost Bank Center should this Project Marvel happen. And the key things that I would want to focus on in that area would be bringing housing and anything healthcare related, because for a long time, that's what has been lacking in that particular area, as well as jobs. But we need to start first with the basics, and some of the basics they still don't have.
So, and I guess I didn't really include the new baseball stadium for the San Antonio Missions, because that's going to be funded through a tax increment reinvestment zone versus all of this. When do you think we will know what all of this is going to cost and how it will be paid for?
I'd hope that we know by early spring. And that's kind of what the word has been, that we should know probably by the early spring what it would cost, or have more of a ballpark figure, right, than the one that we currently had just been floating around. I think that's what it's going to take for the residents to believe in the project and to see that if it's feasible or not.
So not only through this process, but prior to this process and this focus on Project Marvel, the city and county have had to work together on a variety of issues. What do you think the status of that relationship is? Is it a good one? Is it a healthy one? Is it one that needs improvement? Share your thoughts with me on that.
Sure. I think that ever since the pandemic, we see that the city and the county have worked a lot closer than in previous times. I'm very fortunate to have a great relationship with our county commissioner, and it centers around healthcare and access to healthcare. And so again, when we find those things
that
are in common.
Your county commissioner is Rebecca Clay Flores?
My county commissioner is Rebecca Clay Flores.
Okay.
And all of my area is in her precinct. And so we're very fortunate that we have a good relationship. Her team calls my team all of the time, and we work with each other on helping constituent services, et cetera. But beyond that, we have a vision. We have a vision for the South Side. And I feel like at the county level, the county judge and the city mayor should be lockstep as well. They should have the same vision for their residents. And I feel like that needs to continue to happen. The conversations.
Do you think that exists now, that they have the same vision?
I think that right now there's maybe a little bit of differences. I think they both have the same goal in mind, right? Is for a more successful, more prosperous San Antonio. I think that the way that they get there is a little bit different. That could be because of the different personalities. But I feel that more standard meetings. So I'll give you the example of, and I keep going back during the pandemic, but do you remember when during the pandemic we had some county commissioners that would join the city council meetings? And so we would kind of report out and we were all on the same page. Not that I think that that should happen again exactly the way that it happened, but I feel like we have to have some variation of it at some level. And so we don't want to surprise the county with anything that we do as a city, but we also don't want to be surprised by the county. So it's just going to take a lot more. And I don't know how often the judge and the mayor meet right now, but I would assume that it would be a standing meeting, or at least should I be mayor, I would request to see if whoever the judge is would consider a standing meeting.
So you would do something differently than what's being done right now?
I think that I would want to be a little bit more proactive and think about the things that San Antonians are most critically faced with and make those an agenda maybe monthly and just try to pick each other's brains, really, and see how we can leverage each other's, one, relationships, and two, resources. Because the county has resources that the city maybe has already committed that, you know, might still be available, et cetera. So we really do need to talk a little bit more. I don't know how often David Smith and Eric Walsh meet, but that would be a great question, right? That would be something that could come from the top. How often do you all meet? Do you all touch base? And again, I'm not sure how often they do touch base, but I think that would be something critical.
So since Mayor Nuremberg has been mayor for 8 years, is there anything that you would do differently as mayor, something that sticks out that you might have disagreed with him on?
Well, I think that one thing that I would have done differently is added an education committee. Realizing how important education is for the community as I'm talking to them, I would have added that. But then also in some of the appointment processes, I think I'd love to involve the council a little bit more. There has been some appointment processes that seem rushed. They might not have been necessarily rushed. I appreciate that he's reaching out a lot earlier to us now on some of these upcoming appointments. But I think that that process needs to be revisited as well.
So like the charter amendments, he made all of those appointments on the Charter Review Commission and didn't reach out to council members.
So on the charter in particular, I think that we need to reach beyond council members and also generate ideas from the residents that we represent. And so there's opportunities for improvements in every area of the city. And sometimes we're so focused and so involved that we forget that there's other people that have great innovative ideas that we need to bring in as well. And so that's one of the things that I would love to also focus on. I completely understand that the mayor's power is limited and that that's one of the only powers that the mayor has. The mayor is the 11th council member after all. But I do believe that there's some additional added value in bringing in people early on and getting them to buy in on your vision.
All right. So can we hold you to that if you get elected mayor that you're going to reach out?
Okay. Absolutely. Yes. So I'd love to reach out. I think another thing that I want to mention, Eddie, is I'd love to have meetings with like the geographic representation. And I'm saying like I would love to have meetings with districts 3, 4, and 5 for the south side. Districts 3 and 2 that touch the east side. And so kind of break them up into areas and really have one council member who is the expert at a certain area take the lead in those issues. So for instance, Dr. Secourt, should she be elected again by her residents, I would love to have her be the expert on council on education. Phyllis Villagran in District 3 has shown a passion for sustainability. She would probably be the lead in sustainability issues. And so when other people come with ideas, they say, hey, you know, did you know that Phyllis has been working on X, Y, Z? But it's really about empowering. And I would take it from the professor perspective. And you know which students are really good at graphic design versus which students are really good at copywriting, et cetera. And so I think that I would empower because when each one of them succeeds, the entire city succeeds. And so imagine having a council full of people that want to champion something that's very, very critical to them. So Councilwoman Alderete Gavito, she has been so focused on the dog problem that we have.
The dangerous dogs,
absolutely. So why don't we make sure that Councilwoman Alderete Gavito is successful and is known as the expert on council and is advising the mayor on everything related to dangerous dogs.
When you think about this city that you grew up in, that you're from, that your son was born in, that your parents are a part of, and when you think about the future of this city, what excites you the most?
I think what excites me the most is the opportunity. I feel like so many people want to move to San Antonio because we are a welcoming city. Our culture really drives that welcoming atmosphere. And so I'm so proud of the opportunity that exists also with our future generations. We are a relatively young city. And so when we think about the people under 35 that are here in San Antonio, that's who we should be considering investing in. So the opportunity to possibly place education at the forefront is really an incredible opportunity for the city to consider so that we can break those cycles of generational poverty.
You've been listening to mayoral candidate Dr. Adriana Rocha Garcia, who is the current city councilwoman from District 4. Remember, early voting begins on April 22nd and Election Day is May 3rd. Beyond the Bite is a production of Aldrete Strategic Partners. It is edited by Nick Chamberlain of Every Word Media, and it is sponsored by Llano Realty Partners. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe, share with family and friends, and if you think we're worthy, we'd love a 5-star rating. Upcoming episodes will include mayoral candidates Melissa Cabello-Havarda, Robert Melvin, Clayton Perry, and Gina Ortiz-Jones. As always, we thank you for listening.